The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. Hey, if you want to join us on the show this morning, you know we go from 8 to 10. The call-in number is 530-605-4567. If you want to chat or stream live, go to readingteaparty.com and click on the radio show link. And I just wanted to tell you a little bit about where that will take you. That will open up our media page where you can find out about previous shows. Everything's archived. Everything about our guests today and all things sponsor-related, advertiser-related, and lots of links to different things about the Tea Party. Just so everybody knows, and I don't think we bring this up enough, that the message behind We the People and the Reading Tea Party are three core principles of fiscal responsibility, adherence to the Constitution, and limited government. So as we bring our topics on board and the guests that join us on this show, we don't get all caught up in social issues that everybody has personal opinions about or personal experiences. We stick to the three core, basically fiscal principles that I just mentioned. So that kind of guides us, and that's behind all of our topics.
See, and doesn't that sound all politically correct? But see, the real message there is we're not talking about Wienergate this morning.
Yeah, I said. Has everybody heard enough about Wiener's Wiener? I'm sorry. Is that politically correct? I'm on the air, but hey, I'm tired of it.
Elizabeth has had it.
I've had it. I can't think of anything I care less about.
I guess that's a really social issue.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, social networking and, you know. Anyway. Yeah.
See, that's a good social networking, a bad name.
It kind of does.
Yeah, you can hear all the people who don't get social networking going, see, we knew that was bad.
Yeah.
We knew there was
yeah.
something bad about it.
Yeah. Yeah, he needs to kind of calm that thing down a little bit. And I'm talking about the issue.
Oh, it always goes wrong. I lured her in. That's
hey,
one point for me.
Yeah. Hey, wanted to say good morning to Chandler, our sound engineer. I'm not sure he wants to be heard with us this morning, but hey, good morning, Chandler.
Yeah, on
good
that
morning,
note.
Everybody. Good morning.
Okay, tell us about Sovereign Minds tonight.
Tonight, you know, I'm not quite sure what they'll be talking about.
Terry and Sally Raposa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have Terry and Sally Raposa on there.
There we go. Yes, that's right.
10 Buck Terry and Rally Sally.
Yeah.
And Mark sent me a message in the middle of the night with what you guys were going to be talking about. Okay, I'm looking for it really quickly here.
I believe that Terry and Sally are going to talk a lot about the Tea Party movement, especially that in Northern California. We have a lot of groups. How many counties and cities do we have? You know, 4 counties, 12 cities and towns.
Bunches.
I've lost track. So
bunches.
We
so,
go into Oregon and
yeah,
almost
so
to the Nevada
think about
border.
It. Yuba City, Corning, Red Bluff, Redding, Mount Shasta, Yreka.
We cover the Scott Valley pretty well. We go into Klamath Falls.
Klamath Falls.
Crescent City. Did we get that one?
No, forgot about them. We work with them.
Shingletown. Just
oh, yeah,
brand
Shingletown
new one.
Just
brand
started.
New one that just jumped on.
We were working with the Chester guys, but now there's different Chester guys. So we still sort of work with them. Their information linkage is on our site. And, Fall River, Bernie.
Mm-hmm.
And, Lookout.
Is there one in Santa Rosa?
Or, nope,
or
but
anywhere
we work
south?
With them.
We work with them. Yeah.
We do.
Yeah. So I think that's what they're going to talk about. And this is kind of a really...
But still listen anyway, even though we just told you all
yeah.
that. Don't tell them we told.
Yeah. But they'll
be
go
surprised.
Into more detail. And they talk a lot about all the projects that the groups do. And there's so much about attending local political meetings, public forums, public hearings, city council, board of supervisors, planning commissions, school boards. The list goes on and on. Yuba City is really hot on the trail of their city council there. So...
Some towns are a little hotter on different groups of electeds
yeah.
than other towns. So let's see. We have, here's my message from Mark. Sovereign Minds is on from 6 to 7 on the same station. You can find them through this same chat room as well. So if you were to, could you get there from here? No. You'd have to click on a live link. So you're going to go to go to the Tea Party website anyway. We'll throw up something for you so you can get on there. And so it's from 6 to 7 tonight, and they're talking about Tea Party groups and activities.
Okay. And we reference Mark, and that's Mark Kent, who's one of the co-hosts of Sovereign Minds on Sunday nights, 6 to 7 p.m.
With Chandler.
So.
And with Nate, right?
Mostly Nate, yeah. He's the host.
Oh, mostly yeah. Nate. You just push the buttons over there?
I just push, yeah.
Nice. Push I like buttons. It. Great. So that is what the Tea Party movement is all about. And they'll go into more details. That's a great place to tune in tonight.
Absolutely. So we're my first absolutely of the day.
So we're going to have Jim Nielsen tuning in a little bit later in the show.
Yeah. And we were supposed to have Doug LaMalfa on here like right now. But I don't know. We had a little failure to communicate, but it's not permanent. He'll probably pop up here in a little bit. We've sent out, we've sent the reach out to go find him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those guys, man, they are losing their minds, and I don't, I mean,
so you've got a symposium.
I don't hold that against them.
You've got a symposium coming up next week. Give us a little information about that.
We do.
Because that's extremely relevant to every local community in California, in the United States, and worldwide, pretty much.
Yeah. Well,
so, fill us in a little.
It's, well, we're working on the Agenda 21. The Tentacles of Agenda 21 is actually the title of the conference. It's being held by Eagle Forum of California. And Eagle Forum is an organization started by Phyllis Schlafly, S-C-H-L-A-F-L-A-Y, I think it is. It's a tough one to say, mm-hmm. Schlafly. Anyway, eagleforumofcalifornia.com is where you can get information on it. And it is next weekend, Friday and Saturday. And Friday is a lobby day.
And this is in Sacramento, right?
It is in Sacramento. It's Friday's a lobby day, which is kind of great. So for all those people who missed Karen England at the Capital Resource Institute, if you missed her lobby day last time, she's the one hosting the lobby day. This time, I think cost to do lobby day is like $10. It's really inexpensive. So anyway, I would encourage you to check out Eagle Forum of California and look into the Agenda 21 conference, just because there are a whole lot of things. You're going to hear from Sheriff Richard Mack, and I wanted to pull up the flyer here, but I'm being challenged here with my computer and my talking going at the same time, and Elizabeth's typing on the chat room, and got all sorts of stuff going. Oh, the phone is ringing. That's always a good sign.
I just wanted to say that.
Okay, here we go. I've got the schedule.
You remember the Acorn controversy and the young couple that went undercover and exposed Acorn?
Yeah. That's what I was looking
up. He's going to be there. He's going to be
James O'Keefe.
He's going to be one of the presenters at the Eagle Forum. I read that on the Drudge Report last night. That's cool.
That is very cool.
I mean, if that isn't grassroots, I don't know what is.
We've got all sorts of people. You've got Sheriff Richard Mack. You got Aaron Browning from the political, who's a political and campaign strategist. It's What's the Game Plan in 2012 is his topic. You've got Bill Jasper, author and senior editor for New American Magazine. You have Patrick Wood, the editor of the August Review. Dr. Stan Monteith, who is Radio Liberty, is his radio show in the Bay Area. You have our guest, right? Chandler. Yes. You have our guest, Senator Doug LaMalfa. And so here's a sneak preview.
Hi.
Good morning, Doug.
Good morning.
I got a text message yesterday that said, call him. And I'm like, oh, okay, call him in the morning. I think Mark maybe meant call you yesterday. Sorry.
Oh, well, hey, it works out either way. So how are you doing this morning?
Hey, we're doing fine. We were just stalling for time. We got about 30 seconds. We've got to take a quick break. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Got to make money.
Yeah, you know what? The advertisers are what make the world go round. And thank goodness nobody's, you know, I don't know, limited us or regulated us on that one yet. But
oh, they are, but you just don't know it.
I knew you were going to say that. You're going to tell us what other evil tricks are up their sleeve. I was just going to, I was just looking up the press release, actually, from the budget. But I'll let you give it to them in your own words when we come right back. So we will return with California State Senator Doug LaMalfa here on We the People Radio at KCNR, 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
All the gold.
that's a really nice editorial on who's really in charge of our money. Yeah, that's a little comment on the bankers. Yeah. Good morning. Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. We have Senator Doug LaMalfa with us on the line. Good morning.
Good morning.
So how'd you like that? Is all the gold in California hidden in a bank in Southern California with someone else's name on it?
No, it's already overseas somewhere else.
there you go. Yeah, that song's passé, actually, but funny nonetheless. So, you guys have been chained to the wheel for the last 2 days down there.
Well, you know, don't cry for us, Argentina, here. Really.
No, but it's not all that often that you guys wind up in there on Saturdays and all that, and the press reports that are coming out of there aren't really all that. So, what's really going on?
Well, depending on your perspective here, we are doing our job in that the taxes that they're trying to push through were been able to thwart so far, because I don't believe that the problem in California is that the people aren't working hard enough to support their government. So you've heard of the schemes here to raise the taxes via any method necessary here, like they're after the Amazon tax now. That's a big thing in the news.
And, you know, it seems to me, not to cut you off, I'm sorry, but the thing that happens when they try to tax online sales in any particular state is that Amazon will just cut its relationships with its business partners in California.
Yeah,
correct?
Somehow legislators, some of them believe that that when you raise a tax, it just happens in a vacuum, that people don't react to it in any way, either the vendors or the buyers of the products.
You know, we're all just laying down taking it.
Pardon?
We're all just laying around taking it.
Yeah, you'll just take it. So if you put a prohibitive tax increase on, you know, say cigarettes or something else that people say is something that should be taxed, well, they either buy less of them or they buy them somewhere else where the tax doesn't affect it. It just doesn't happen that easily. So if you think you're going to make all this money by making this maneuver, that usually isn't the case. So, but the most interesting thing here, we can go back to the taxes that are about to expire here in a couple of weeks. These are passed basically in the dark of night of February of 2009. You had a sales tax increase of 1% statewide. The car tax was raised almost double, and the income tax had a surcharge on top of it of 0.25%. So these all combined to cost the average family about $1,000, $1,200, $1,500 per year. Those were passed by the legislature without a vote in place for 2 years. So as a follow-up to that, in May of 2009, the legislature had also arranged that there would be a vote by the people in May of 2009 to extend those taxes, not just the 2 years the legislature did, but two more years. That was rejected by a 2-to-1 margin by the voters. So for them to come back to the table now and say, hey, would you like to do those taxes for 5 years, when it was rejected for two, seems a little tone-deaf to me.
And this is the part where they want everybody to vote on it, right?
Well, see, that's what's being crammed into my ears, like, let the people vote. Well, no one's preventing anybody from voting here, okay? Every time there's an election, I'm out there cheerleading, saying, you know, people get out there and vote. But what they're trying to spin it as is I'm somehow preventing people from voting. Really what it is that I'm not voting as a legislature to call yet another election to answer a question that's already been answered pretty frequently by voters. Elections cost money, so another statewide election will be $90 million. And all the polling out there on the street, all the word of mouth, all the indicators are that the voters are going to soundly reject the same taxes that were done before. So my focus has been, why don't we do things to make government run more efficiently, more cheaply, do things that it is supposed to be focused upon, and not the things that it shouldn't be. So I'm looking for ways that it should save money. The very first thing I've been trying to tackle has been not spending money on high-speed rail in California. With we don't have it yet, so that money hasn't been spent. If we save it now, we'll save it for practically eternity. So
how is it that high-speed rail makes sense for the same people that think that we should pay for in-state tuition for illegal aliens? I can hear people thinking this. How do they
square all that?
Yeah, what are they thinking? What do you hear on the? Do they debate this?
How on one
this?
Hand are we $9.6 billion upside down on our current budget? Possibly. How are we out of money for everything? We hear you're going to cut schools, you're going to cut police, you're going to cut fire. Actually, it's not us; it's the other side. But and all these things they threaten. Yet on the other hand, with a straight face, they can say, "Well, let's go ahead and keep dumping money into this high-speed rail thing." I don't know how they figure that. I don't know how they square those two things. Because if you don't have money for one thing, yet you have money for something else that anybody can plainly see is going to be triple the price by the time you finish it, I don't see it. But I can't get inside of the mind of folks that feel that way.
Well, do they have to get up and rationalize this? I mean, do they try?
The best rationalization you can hear is, well, we don't want to be left behind by those other countries that have high-speed rail. You know, they're getting way ahead of us on high-speed rail. Well, that's like, it's just getting way ahead on producing red ink. I mean,
well,
why do we have to keep up with that?
And from a geographic standpoint, if they're comparing us to Europe, Europe is geographically much smaller. It's very easy to get from country to country, and even on our East Coast, it's much easier to travel from state to state. But, you know, you get in this part of the country, and, you know, it's a significant haul to get from one place to another. I mean, we're comparing apples and oranges, I think.
Well, you do. You're talking things are quite different culturally, and the proximity everybody has. I mean, there's areas in this country where it could make some sense. That would be with the dense population that you have on the eastern seaboard there. But they have something called Acela there, A-C-E-L-A, which pretty much fits that role, and it is not doing everything that they're miraculously thinking that it would do in California. So, and then someone needs to define for me how it's going to be high-speed rail by the time it stops in every little burg between South San Francisco and L.A. there, because they made it run through the Central Valley in order to pick up those votes of the legislators in the valley, because it didn't have the votes until they talked about changing the route. So,
you know,
politics enters into everything.
And the last time you talked about this issue, you dropped a figure, obviously in the millions upon millions of dollars that had already been spent studying this issue, and none of those dollars were actually used to move the project forward. Weren't those millions upon millions of dollars used for conferences and traveling around to study other
They're even
systems?
Being spent to lobby back in Washington, D.C. to get more money. So
the money we've already spent.
The line of if spend a buck to make a buck, well,
yeah.
In this case, we'll borrow someone else's buck in order to get more of someone else's buck to spend it. So
a lot of this money's actually been used to facilitate the travel and, you know, all of the lodging and meal expenses of people traveling around studying the issue.
They've got public relations firms out there in order to reach out to people in the valley there and make them feel better about this. And it's a sales pitch. It's just a big sales ad. So. We know how that all is with when you watch ads on TV and everything's 1995. But wait, if you act now, we'll give you two.
Yeah.
So actually, in committee the other day, they brought up that they want to start the phase two of the project. They want to start funding it. They wanted to put an additional $5.4 million in, so the leg from Sacramento into the main line and from San Diego up into the main line. They want to start planning that too, yet they have no plan right now for where the actual line is going to be, what it's going to cost, how much is going to have to be above ground or at grade or even below ground in the South Bay area because nobody wants this thing running through their neighborhood in Palo Alto. So they're not even any closer to having accountability, but they're trying to move farther ahead. So, you know, I don't want to dwell on that one. That's just one example.
Well, what can people do? I mean, who do they, you know, sending letters to your office, sending letters to Jim Nielsen, that, I mean, you guys get it. So the people in this area are just, you know, obviously they can only tell the people who understand so many times that they agree with them. What can they do?
I'd say you would pound the emails and letters in at the upper levels where the money is also being, you know, the White House, okay? The president is starting to feel the heat on this thing a little bit. They have money set aside in this pot in the stimulus fund that can only be spent on high-speed rail. Isn't it fun how always the wasteful money, they put it into a pot that can't be touched for anything else? You can only spend it on high-speed rail, but other money can be moved around, moved away from law enforcement, moved away from the things that people really want, and say, well, you're going to have to raise your taxes if you want to continue funding, keeping cops on the street or the firefighters going. But all this other stuff, yeah, this is protected money.
Wow.
So at the state level, make the governor uncomfortable, and then, you know, with continuing to be in this position here, maybe he can use his blue pen, his blue pencil on it. But more of it is just keep pounding away on the Transportation Committee, on the Budget Committee, the other members. And you're right, you know, your NorCal guys understand this already, that it's not the right use of money that we don't have. So, but, you know, getting back to the overall tax structure here, we were talking about the extension that they're clamoring for the voters to place on the ballot. Well, now, because so much time has gone by and there hasn't been a deal hammered out between Republicans and Democrats, they want to go past that and just have the legislature just pass the tax. They're calling it a bridge tax now. Which comes with all neat little metaphors with that. A bridge tax, you know, the bridge to nowhere.
Yeah, I was going to say bridge to nowhere. So they're doing this because they know the voters aren't going to approve it? The bridge to your wallet.
Yeah, you know, the bridge to the 21st century. Remember that deal?
Oh, God. Okay, wait. So while everybody's thinking about the bridge to something, let's have a bridge to our advertisers here for 2 minutes. We can stoke up some coffee. When we come back, we have Mike Adams on the phone who's got a question for you. Or a comment or something. And
all the above.
Yeah, did I call that right? Okay. And we'll come back here in just a couple of minutes at We the People Radio on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Rainbow, way up high.
Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong.
So I think it's the battle lines being drawn between the public and the private tax dollars.
And
taken.
The spenders and the cutters. A lot of battle lines. Hey, so Mr. Adams, what do you have for us?
Well, I've got kind of a comment question for the senator. And I'm sure he gets it, but I don't understand why the rest of them don't get it. I'm sure that they believe that it's easier to buy votes with the people's dollars than to earn them. But one of the things that I noticed recently in the news that California is listed as the worst state to do business in. Now, I can argue that's very true, and that my partner and I just closed down a business because the taxation rate, for instance, for a simple LLC, is $800 a year in California, whether you make a dime or not. And you talk to those people, and the arrogance of this is the price you pay for the privilege of doing business in California, I'm going, it isn't a privilege, and to hell with you, I'll take my business to Oregon. It's the businesses that employ the people that make the money that the state can then tax. And it seems that most of the legislatures do not understand that they think this works in a vacuum, and that, you know, they keep beating up on the businesses and with environmental taxes and more regulations, and won't let us extract the resources. I'm a gold miner, by the way, and you know, they say if we prohibit gold mining, it'll save us $1.2 million. Well, I'm sorry, $23 million is what the gold miners bring into the economy. It doesn't make sense. Is there something in the water in Southern California that makes the synapses not fire?
What I think it is those metal detectors that you walk through on the way in. When you do that day in, day out, it starts a little bit of a brain melt. So that's why I sidestep them each day. So now, not to make light of a serious question you asked there, but I think you kind of worked for a second. And on the mining issue, the budget this year is trying to save a little bit of money from completing a promised study of the fish and game to determine what the effect of, suction dredge mining is on streams here. There's just as much argument that it's helping to clean up the streams of heavy metals because we find that there's mercury occurring in them. It actually helps fluff up the stream bed and make spawning better for fish, but the only thing we can ever hear of is that by mankind doing anything that's bad for the environment. So we're taking away a property right instead by doing this. We've hurt people's mining claims. We've taken away an economic benefit to the area, probably a positive environmental benefit, all in the name of the worship of the environment by those that come from urban areas.
Well, it's an interesting point that you say about property rights there. I put my Board of Commissioners on notice. We won't be paying our property taxes on our claims this year. And although,
be in touch with us on how that goes, because if you have something of no value, then you should have no reason to be paying for it. But I'm sure they're going to have their hand out anyway for it, whether you make a living or not. And so that sounds like a good potential there for a tax relief, much like when a fire comes through and burns out an area because, an unmanaged forest area, that burns up people's property. Frequently, legislation is passed in the following session to provide tax relief to those people because of their loss. So they're not paying a property tax at the full value of what it was when there was a stand of timber or their homes or whatever. So that frequently is done. That sounds like a great idea here because you have now a much greater diminished value that you shouldn't be paying a property tax at a true claim price for.
So
would you, Mike, would you be willing to stay in touch with our office on that later?
Oh, absolutely. I've been pushing on Erin and she keeps saying, you don't get it. Doug's on our side. Doug's on our side. And I'm going, yeah, we need to get some more on our side.
Because, Mike's up there in Scott Valley, and they get, he's not in Scott Valley, but he's up near Scott Valley, and those guys up there, they get shot in the back by every bureaucracy known to man, so they're a little bit...
They're on the tip of the spear of every regulator, it's one of the nicest areas you'll find. Beauty, great people up there, great resources, and for some reason it's a test bed for every...
It's come down I think that everything they're doing now, particularly with this redistricting thing, that it's clear they just want us to revolt. and I guess the gentler end of revolt would be to secede from the state.
Which you feel double-crossed once again, don't you? Doesn't it feel like being double-crossed? No matter what the map ends up in Siskiyou County, I know that our office is going to continue to respond to the needs of over there in the valley because, I've represented that for 6 years in the Assembly and the first 2 years of the Senate, no matter what the map is. So even if they shift it out, we're going to pay attention to the issues because they're the right issues, the right thing to... do for those constituents there. So that said, I hope that the people in the western part of Siskiyou County will make the redistricting commission very aware that they don't want to be split up. into two different districts in the Senate or the Assembly or in the Congress, because it really defies common sense on that. I know the reason they split off that western one-third, I think, was in order to capture a little population and lump it in with the coast, which the way they drew the seat, it was underpopulated. So they had to go find some numbers someplace, and so I think they're somehow in their wisdom they decided that would be the easiest place to capture those, you know, 5 or 8,000, however many people live in that portion on the western portion of Siskiyou. They also took away Trinity County and put it in the coast, which I don't think serves Trinity very well. We're, Trinity's hub, Weaverville, Hay Fork, you know, Trinity Center, those areas are much closer to Redding, which all the legislators have offices in Redding or have a fairly easy ability to travel from Redding over to Trinity County. It's a much easier, it's a much difficult travel from Eureka to come over to, say, Weaverville. So, you know, the maps are well-intentioned, but they need to be done better. And so we'll continue to work to serve those areas, but it would be best to not lose them in the district.
Well, we would welcome your continued support. And yes, we are letting the people know that we're unhappy with the way the map is. Is that
you just need to be very vocal in the coming weeks here, and you don't have much time to waste on that, because you know, the next draft comes out in early July, and then they want to have the thing finished by August 15th before the minority groups start suing on it on August 16th because they didn't get enough of the.
All right, thank you very much.
Have it skewed towards their needs. So anyway.
All right. Well, we knew that redistricting was going to come up because the new maps came out. I don't know if it was Thursday or Friday, but
Friday.
Yeah, all of a sudden, all the phones started ringing. What do you hear down there about that, or is just everything with the budget completely overshadows?
Oh no. The legislators are multitasking, watching the legislation, and certainly watching where the maps are. Everybody's really, really concerned about that as well. So you know, you can see people passing maps around. On the Senate floor and stuff, looking, look at this, look at that. You know, it's a hot topic. So,
well, they have people counting on them and people they have relationships with, and all of a sudden people are feeling like they, well, like the guys up there, they're feeling a little bit like they might get abandoned. So how does it work? I think, you know, since it only happens every 10 years, nobody gets very smart about it, and we certainly have...
Well, we're in a brand new, brave new world here, so to speak, on this, because we have the commission now.
Mm-hmm.
Before, the people's input was, you know, tell it to the legislators, but the legislators probably were going to just say, yeah, right, and go back into the smoke-filled room and draw it how they saw fit. Because, you know, if you look at maps the way they are now, obviously it wasn't done with the type of integrity towards keeping them on a sensible-looking scale there. It was much more about what served the legislators and the parties and things like that. Now, is there plenty to complain about with the maps that are being done now? Sure. But one thing you can say is that they're not worried about making it partisan this way or that way, or making sure that, you know, that they take care of the legislator where he or she lives in that district. You know, none of that stuff's happening. You have like the Sacramento district, for example, has three members of the assembly. Their residences are all lumped into one district. You know, it's not convenience for the legislator. It's actually what the commission interpreted was best for the region, best for the voters. So in that sense, we're miles ahead by having the commission do it. But these are part of the growing pains and part of the, you know, the problem that you're never going to make everybody happy. But that doesn't mean you accept what the first preliminary maps are, because they haven't heard from the Siskiyou County on that proposal until they put it out there and say, what do you think? This is the what do you think point.
And they have not had public meetings in Siskiyou County, is that correct?
No, they haven't had one up there. We had that, the very first one in the whole state was in Redding. You guys remember that, I'm sure, back
mm-hmm.
in about...
Yeah, it kind of snuck up on
two
us,
months
too.
Ago. And yeah, it kind of snuck up on people, and I know that it ended up being pretty well attended from all accounts I've heard of it. But
yeah, we have a nice little communication network going on.
Uh-huh. So,
well, the thing is,
you know, but nobody really knew what to do with it because you were kind of commenting on something that was in a vacuum a little more so. Like, I think the biggest, you know, the biggest emphasis had been is just, you know, keep the coast and keep the valley, and, you know, don't, you know, there was talk of having lines drawn from east to west where you'd have Humboldt and Fiske and Mendocino drawn in with Modoc and Lassen and Plumas, lines going all the way across the state. So that would have been probably a little helter-skelter for legislators to represent and for people to have some kind of commonality.
Oh, yeah, you go from three representatives in the northern part of the state to one. Hey, we need to chat with our advertisers again. When we come back, we'll have another little 15-minute chunk there. And so anything that you want people to know or things that they can do, things that they might not know about, stuff that the media hasn't reported yet, and unless they're really tracking, let folks know about some of that. So you've got 2 minutes to think that through. Grab some coffee, everybody. We will be back with Senator Doug LaMalfa on We the People Radio at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media. Folks, that things don't change real quick. Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. Don't forget, give us a call, 605-4567, or to chat with our folks on the chat room or stream live, go to readingteaparty.com and click on the radio show link. Everything you need is right there. And we're back with Senator Doug LaMalfa. So before we broke off before the break, you were going to tell us...
You were playing AC/DC on the way into that, too. Is that the symbolism there?
Yeah, Hell's Bells. See, only the true audiophiles know the actual songs. Yeah, I thought you'd like that one. So you were going to tell us some specific...
Steve Miller Band coming out.
Oh, I love Steve Miller, yeah. See, this is all our music. We love it. So some specific doable things for folks out there. What can we do? Hide our checkbooks?
you can vote with your feet, I guess, and that anytime they raise the tax on something, you just buy less of that product. But it's really the bigger thing is the communications on from the public to the voters to the, I mean, excuse me, from the voters to the legislators, and they have to feel the heat down there. And so, I mean, you ought to see the stuff. We're not just doing the budget; we're doing all the committee work, all the other legislative ideas that come out. And I also sit as the vice chairman of the Elections and Redistricting Committee. And you ought to see the stuff coming through that committee there that distorts elections, that takes away from election security here. I mean, they want to have people be able to come into the voting precinct and register the same day and then walk right over and vote, and doing it without identification. And they're trying to make it where if you're a registered voter but are overseas right now, that you can email it your vote in.
Oh, that's terrific.
Or fax it in. And so this is just fraught with the ability to rig votes or flat out steal votes, and they keep pushing it in that direction. Now, I think people, when you hear stories like the state of Washington a few years ago, where the governor was elected with votes that didn't exist up in Kings County, and the overall picture of making it easier for people that shouldn't be voting to vote or for ballots to fall into others' hands, it erodes the confidence in the election process, which means the legitimate voters out there become cynical and stay away. And you know what happens when it's left to the few that want to participate by those that don't, that it really takes away your ability to complain about the process there if you're not taking part of it, right?
Well, we've got a lot of our comments on the chat room were, you know, about the illegal immigration thing. I mean, it's a ton of money there's, we know that that contributes to a ton of voter fraud. And in the midst of all this stuff, you know, they've voted in-state tuition for people who aren't even supposed to be here, who technically can't get jobs when they get out of school anyway. And then they killed the bill that would require ID at the voting place.
Which is this common sense stuff. You have more security there by renting a movie than
true story.
You would for voting for the government of the country.
So what's the rationale? I mean, when they're proposing this stuff, do they just propose it and vote for it and kind of smoke you guys in the minority and then it's a done deal? Or do
that's what happens on the numbers. But, you know, all they have to start saying is like, oh, well, if you require that, it's like Jim Crow laws. That's like having a poll tax. That's like this, like that, which is a ridiculously specious argument. But that's the facade that they hide behind and are able to get away with it. So until such a point that, you know, we the patriots, put the initiative together to actually put it on the ballot and pass it, the legislature is not inclined to have that requirement of voter ID. All we can do is propose the bill, watch it get shot down the first committee, have a press conference about it, and you go home again for a year or two on the issue, you know. So those are good efforts in order to put a spotlight on it that, you know, I could propose the bill or my other colleague could propose the bill and it gets a little bit of a ripple in the press, but if the public yawns and moves on, then we're going to keep getting what we get.
So do you think if they do try, I mean, the press release I saw said that they're proposing an $11 billion tax increase. I mean,
those are the taxes we're talking about. Yes, it's the bridge tax. Yeah, we didn't even finish on that one, did we? This is the proposal to, you know, the governor promised in the election that he said, I will not raise taxes. And then the asterisk mark is without a vote of the people, right? So in big letters, I will not raise your taxes. And then down below in the fine print, without a vote of the people. Well, he wants to hold true to that and have a vote by the people. So that's what all the clamoring has been, to have a special election here so that they can keep the taxes going on the sales tax, the income tax, and the car tax. Well, 5 months have gone by now, and we're getting into the new budget year without those new taxes being in place. So they want to go ahead and do the bridge tax until the voters can weigh in on the issue, if we can hammer out a deal here in the legislature, right? So they want us to go ahead and vote it in right now, and then by about mid-September would be enough time in order to put a special election on the ballot to ask the voters once again what they already rejected by a 2-1 margin back in May of 2009. We'll ask them again in September of 2011. So, but in the meantime, we have to have the bridge tax that the legislature passes anyway and it collects the money anyway, not just from now until a September special election. They want it to go for a full year as a bridge tax. So that would defy the governor's promise of saying, well, we won't raise your tax without your vote. Well, they're going to keep the money for the full year anyway. So it would be one thing if they only collected the so-called bridge tax from now until Election Day, and if the measure lost on the ballot on Election Day, that the tax gets cut off immediately the next day. But they want to continue to collect it for a whole year. Again, defying that promise, defying the whole issue, defying what the public opinion is out there and what the voting results have been the last couple of elections.
Now, what would those specific tax sources be? Vehicle, income tax?
It's the same ones that are about to expire on June 30th. It's the doubling of the car tax. It's the sales tax being raised kept up that additional 1% it has the last 2 years. Now, it's interesting, they did relent on the income tax for now. That was raised at 0.25%, but all it has to happen is that be put back in place, later legislatively. It can start again in January. We don't have to do it right now, per se, because if you put it in January, you actually pay the income tax in most cases April 15th next year anyway. So that's kind of the little one waiting out there to come in. So the interesting thing about this bridge tax thing, though, again, it flies in the face of what they're talking about, let the people vote. because, you know, we know the powers that be understand that it's not going to pass anyway. The SEIU union guy down there knows it's not going to pass, and he says, forget the vote, just go straight to taking the tax. So they're brazen about that now. So I've at least mentioned in the floor speech when we brought the bridge tax up, like, so we have this pledge to let the people vote. Are we going to place all this money that would be taken from right now up until the September election into a lockbox so that when the voters reject it, we could refund all that money to them so that at least the money that would be collected up to that point would not be taken without their vote, right? And, of course, that got ignored. Does that make sense?
I think the answer was probably no. It's kind of like when your dad doesn't want to answer.
More like a collective grunt, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. It's kind of disingenuous, you know? And there are so many things that we could be doing in this state. Just so many things. I mean, there's so many great things we could be doing. So walking precincts in other areas, helping other people, other conservatives around the state that are running for office, that's going to be just pivotal.
That comes a little later. Right now, we're in that period of time. If you look at things that I do at least as two-year cycles, you know, when you're getting down to the crunch of the election time, I think volunteers, people that are watching should be focused on who you're going to elect. But there's all the time before that that those that you have just elected need to hear from the people of the state of what it is they want. You know, it isn't just ballot box that the interaction ends. It's during that time of year. You know, let's say, for example, right now, the commission is doing their business on drawing the map. So, well, the commission needs to hear from the people immediately. Other issues, the legislators need to hear from us, all of us, on is spending money on high-speed rail the right thing? Is shutting down coal power plants on the East Coast when electricity prices are likely to zoom up? Is that good policy for back in Washington? You know, is the EPA doing much more harm by causing that? Is the types of spending you see as priorities in the budget? Do you agree with that? So it's just continuing to have a presence and peppering the legislators with those emails, those letters, those phone calls, those office visits, coming to committee, and making it seem just a little less like the public isn't paying attention and that the public doesn't care.
All right.
Ultimately, that does motivate.
Well, good. We're glad something motivates. So it might be some carpools to Sacramento. Hey, we've got about 15 seconds. So we want to thank you very much for calling us this morning.
Have a great day.
We already have requests to come back and do it again.
So, I'll be back, as they say.
Thanks for all your hard work, Doug.
We'll be back in 5 minutes with Assemblyman Jim Nielsen here on We the People.
Thank you for listening to KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media. This is KCNR Shasta Redding. The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party, KCNR 1460. Give us a call at 605-4567 or to chat or stream live. Go to readingteaparty.com and click on the radio link. Our second guest for this hour is our own California Assemblyman, Mr. Jim Nielsen, and I believe he's on the line. Good morning.
Because he's a punctual fellow.
Good Sunday morning, everybody.
Everybody grab a cup and listen up.
All right, so we had Senator LaMalfa on the first half, giving us a little sneak preview. He didn't give us too much sneak preview on what's going on in Sacramento as far as the, he didn't say there were any, like, you know, wrestling matches on the floor or anything, but from the sounds of what's going on, there should be.
I don't think anybody really wants to know what's going on in Sacramento. They'd be very disgusted, I believe.
Yeah, it's a little too early in the morning.
Not really. They are kind of disgusted, but tell us what you know.
Well, people better be very, very concerned. You're on the threshold, unless a few of us can stop it, of paying some $54 billion more in taxes the next 5 years in order to provide your communities be filled up with unrehabilitated parolees and inmates. And the governor's dangerous realignment plan for public safety does just that. And it would be funded by these massive tax increases. And keep in mind that these tax increases aren't just for 5 years. To trace it back, when they were first passed, a year later there was an attempt in 2009 to extend them. And that was defeated by the voters. They said they did not want to do that. Then last November, again, an increase of the vehicle license fee, the same purpose, was defeated by the voters. However, it was preceded that was extended 2 more years. So it was extended the 2 more years. And now with this 5-year extension, your 2-year taxes have become 7-year taxes. However, these taxes now are linked to funding public safety and education. So 5 years hence, what's to happen? Are we going to cut education and public safety, these billions of dollars? Because the money that would have been spent from the general fund on them anyway now will have been spent on other wonderful, wonderful things. And so we'll be in a very tight spot, being forced to renew those taxes, Aaron, yet again. And in addition to it, related to the public safety realignment, now social programs, such as drug treatment and mental health, will now be considered public safety, and I have a higher priority for the funding for law enforcement than even the cops on the street, the deputy sheriffs and the police officers in the streets, and our district attorneys. Is that something we want to invest in, folks? I don't think so.
That's just nutty. And, you know, we have all these reports coming out, you know, with police and fire being cut. You know, the legislature's looking at this, you know, $11 billion bridge tax. And then you hear in places like Chicago and a few other cities, they have people breaking out in spontaneous, they're not really riots, they're more like angry mobs. You know, they're pulling people out of cars and they just kind of all kind of go over the edge at the same time. They're calling it wilding. So I think people are losing it just a little bit.
Well, we will be the ones that lose it here because our families will not be safe, nor will our pocketbooks. And it doesn't do anything to increase the economic opportunities in California for individuals and corporations and companies and businesses to invest. To the contrary, it discourages it. And therefore, there won't be the jobs. It does not help us with jobs. This massive tax increase, this massive chaos in the streets that will occur.
Well,
be advised, I know this is going to happen. I was chairman of the Board of Prison Terms of California for 15 years, along with raising kids and cattle in the years between my Senate tenure and my Assembly tenure. I've looked at this up front and very personal. And there is no question. In fact, this very same thing has happened in the last several years in much, much smaller ways. In 1992, something similar was done. And the chaos that occurred at that time caused it to be dumped. Early on, the first year in Arnold Schwarzenegger's administration, they did something called a new parole model. That same thing happened. It blew up. They quickly stopped it. This is that times 1,000.
Well, I think that people who, you know, the one thing that we didn't address in the last hour that I guess we should bring up, there are lots of folks out there thinking, well, we'll just separate from Southern California. We'll just, you know, institute the state of Jefferson. That's not a quick enough thing to fix this. And maybe you could explain to people why.
We don't want it north and south either. We want it east and west. We do not want to have San Francisco and the North Coast a part of Northern California, the state of Northern California, or whatever it would be called. If you want to do it east and west, then talk to me. But if you want to do it north and south, then I'm sorry, I'm not interested in being a part of something with the North Coast and San Francisco.
Yeah, it's interesting, huh? Well, and depending on who you talk to, they think Monterey is Northern California, so I guess we'd have to be extremely careful, but that's not something that's likely to happen soon. So, like it or not, we're all in this happy boat together. What do you see in the assembly, on the assembly side specifically, that you would like people to know that maybe they're not hearing about?
Well, I think what they need to worry about is the abstract world that some legislators live in. And what the kind of life that we live in the Sacramento and the San Joaquin Valleys, and I consider those very similar, that they have no concept of what that's all about. And when Doug LaMalfa and I talk about it, their eyes glaze over. And further, that it's a generational thing, and it's societal, it's not just legislative. It drives Doug and I both crazy. We have now a generation of people in California, in America, who are me now, me first, no tomorrow, everything for me. That's really difficult to deal with in terms of policy, because there is no concept of what this is going to mean, what you're doing today in the legislature will mean for our grandchildren. Classic example was the water plan of 2 years ago, and I was a key negotiator in the assembly working on a new water plan for California, and the colleagues that I was negotiating with were all preoccupied with the irrigation district board or the water district board they served on in San Diego, and they could not see it beyond that, nor could they see it beyond those who thought all was the delta. Everything in water was about the delta. It is not. And they could not have any idea what this would mean 50 years from now, whatever we were doing in water policy. It was all about giveaway programs now for great, wonderful ideas. And that's very difficult. Notwithstanding all that, we were able to secure, and that was my job, to secure some very, very strong, the strongest ever area of origin protection language, which I've been trying to do since the 1980s with a negotiator on the water plan then during the Dick Mason administration. So we did get something out of that. But the fundamental point is this attitude in the community and of legislators to just look about now, me and now. That's very hard to deal with.
Well, I don't.
And another thing I must tell you, Aaron, I think the folks need to know, because it's a product of the same thing. I'm used to an institution where there is a process, a budget process, that you do certain things to achieve a budget. You have subcommittee hearings, you have budget committee hearings, you go to the floor, you have a conference committee, a very orderly process. The same thing in how legislation goes. That's not extant today. There is no process. I said it last Thursday in the budget committee. This was a budget passed by fiat. Fiat meaning nobody read a word of the actual legal language that will be the budget. There were just a whole bunch of concepts. The minority party had zero say in whatever it was. In fact, our ideas, like my idea along with Assemblyman Jeff Gorrell to fund law enforcement, was defeated in committee. My idea about an HMO medicine concept to save money in the prisons was defeated in committee. The Republican ideas were not even considered. And there was nothing but a hearing of just conversation about these, quote, concepts. And it was only an hour and a half, and at 4:30, an hour after we began, the chairman was wanting to adjourn and have a vote and adjourn so his Democratic members could get on planes to leave. That is disgraceful. Process.
God, no kidding.
Thick Elizabeth Scott got some quiz questions for you.
You know, I was just getting back to the prisoners being released in the state of California. Rumor has it that even though they claim that these prisoners being released will be low-level offenders, what's the truth about the severity of their crimes?
Let me assure you again, I've looked this one in the eye. I've been wrestling matches with them in hearings. I've dealt with everybody from the true low-level offenders to the death row inmates who were executed. There really aren't any such thing as low-level offenders in prison. There are those who will be rehabilitated and change their ways somewhere down the path, and that may be 10% at best. There are others who will continue their criminality sort of basically at the same level, property crimes to feed their drug habits, for example. And there's a very large number who will have their behavior escalate, meaning they will do worse. Now, that's because they have not been rehabilitated in prison. Prison rehabilitation has historically been rather a joke. Nor has there been enough resources in the community to help them change their ways. So they're not such things as low-level offenders. They will continue to do their crimes. That's the real tragedy. Now, the solution to it is to, and this just takes 10, 15, 20 years, and that is early intervention. First of all, it starts with the family. The breakdown of the family in America is the biggest reason that we've got crime the way we have crime in America. And that's what I call the product of the broken heart. The child was not loved and nurtured and did not get values instilled in them. They then go to drugs, gangs, alcohol, and criminal behavior as their refuge, which becomes, in fact, their family that and their sustenance. That is so tragic. And we need to intervene. And then as these youth begin to mature into the young adulthood, maximum intervention, rehabilitative intervention, loving intervention in their lives. After that point, you pretty much lost them. And I quickly learned that in 1992 when Pete Wilson asked me to take over the Board of Parole hearings or prison terms and straighten out the mess. That the only thing I could do was try to see that we rehabilitated what we could, but just keep the rest of them as much away from the public as we possibly could. We are still in that mode.
Some things never change. We will be back with Assemblyman Jim Nielsen in 2 minutes. Going to thank our advertisers here at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media. Unfortunately, most of us don't live there, so the realities of everything going on are the realities are real. Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party, 605-4567. Give us a call. So we are with Assemblyman Jim Nielsen, and we were talking about the prisoners being released into California over the next couple of years. And Assemblyman Nielsen, we were talking on the break and wondering exactly how the release works. Is it incremental over time? How do they determine how many are being released into which communities? What are we looking for in Shasta County?
Well, I don't have a breakout for Shasta County. It won't be as huge as L.A. County. That's where most of the population, criminal population, comes from as far as a percentage. But It's already in process. Department of Corrections, when AB 109 passed about 4 months ago, already began a full court press by the 1st of July to begin these releases to the community and policies that will make it harder to put people back in, okay? By this time next year, there should be some 28,000 combination of inmates and parolees in our communities, unsupervised largely, who otherwise would not have been. By 2015, that would total around 106,000. Now, again, that's a population, almost all of whom are not rehabilitated and who will continue some kind of criminality. They are absolutely moving ahead with it. Now, it takes many forms. One is extra credits, giving them credits that they don't ever never have earned and won't earn now in order to be released earlier. It is remanding state inmates now to be located in local jails, which will force your local sheriff, Tom Basenko, to let people out. The local committed inmates that came from the court system and were placed in jail for shorter jail terms, they will have to be released and moved out to accommodate the state inmates, in addition to those state inmates that just flat out get out earlier. Also, sentencing law initiatives by the voters. In fact, this bill, AB 109, violates three initiatives voted on by the people: Chelsea's Law, Marcy's Law, and Three Strikes. And Marcy's Law, I was one of the authors of it. I wrote the darn thing and helped write Chelsea's Law. And this just outright violates it. It also, the AB 109, will make it harder to put parolees back in prison. It makes your courts the parole board. They are not equipped to, and I don't think constitutionally entitled to do this. And that is a violation of Marcy's Law, and I'm a part of preparing a lawsuit to enjoin that action. So they're going to be out there. It will be harder to put them back in. Local commitments are going to be dumped out in the streets. And poor law enforcement have kind of a gun at their head by the state of California or this administration to go along with the deal.
And I think people need to realize that in addition to the cost of incarcerating and the cost of the crimes that they will recommit, they also completely go on public assistance when they come out. I mean, it's just like a double whammy to the taxpayer. We're paying from them, you know, we're paying for them coming and going.
Yes, we are, and they're not going to be walking into job opportunities, folks. Even were there job opportunities out there, these individuals are not prepared to be going to work day by day by day. That's not what they've been growing up doing and what they're used to doing. It's just so very sad.
Hmm. Well, we're going to have a guy from the parole board up here in Northern California come and speak to our Red and Tea Party meeting on a Monday night in a couple of weeks. But the big question that comes up a lot is how those people wind up here. Did they commit their crimes here and that's how they come back here? I mean, when people get released, how do they know where to send them?
The law used to be until the mid-90s that you were released to the county of commitment. In other words, where you did your crime. It was then changed in part, and I was head of the Board of Prison Terms at the time and worked on this, in part because, let's not get ahead of it. It was then changed from being the county of last of commitment to the county of last legal residence. In other words, where did you live before you were committed to prison? It was changed to that. And that was to help stop some of the disproportionate placement of parolees in communities. And Shasta County was one of the victims. I worked long ago with former police chief Bob Blankenship on this in the early 90s, well, through the entire 90s, in fact. And so it's the county of last legal residence that they go to now.
Hmm. Yeah, because
But Shasta County will get plenty, let me assure you.
Yeah, that's one of those things you'd like to be left out of. Usually you want to be included, but not anymore.
Well, you know, I want to give you something that's of a kind of a high note. You just had Doug LaMalfa on, and Doug LaMalfa and I are very, very close friends. Our families have been very close for so many years. I knew his dad. What a wonderful man that he was. And all my years in the legislature as a senator and now as an assemblyman, I've never had any fellow assembly person or senator that was a part of the districts that I represented that I've ever been able to work with and had almost a brotherly relationship with like Doug. And Aaron, you know that the staff of Doug Lamoff and Jim Nielsen are really just like one. We work in tandem. They're not going one way or the other and independently doing things. It's a coordinated effort. Doug and I, in terms of representing the area, both come from the same farm background, have the same farm values. We have the same deep and abiding faith that governs our lives. We're so dedicated to our families, and that really makes it so wonderful to be working with Doug to represent this wonderful North State. But it makes us a much stronger voice, both in the district with the people, and most assuredly in Sacramento. And I want people to know that. That's a rare thing in government and in politics.
And I think that's what gives people a little bit of hope up here anyway, is that everybody in office isn't a lunatic. Speaking of lunatics, okay, we went to the illegal alien place with Doug, and we've still got that on our chat room. Somebody wants to know what the approximate percentage is of illegal alien prisoners that we're all forking out money for.
It's historically stayed right about 10% of the total prison population. And a majority of those hail from Mexico. As chairman of the Board of Prison Terms, I had one interesting responsibility. It was the governor delegated the governor's authority to me to determine when a foreign-born inmate from whatever country applied to be released, not from California custody, to go serve the rest of their time in their home country. I had to approve that. Now, that sounds really great, you know, like just send them all home. Well, you know, there's a problem with that. First of all, the authority that I had was subject to the approval of the Department of State, and that was a whole other matter. They generally didn't approve any of the transfers, even if I did approve them. But further, I knew that in European Covenant countries, Europe, this is governed by what's called a European Covenant, and those European countries look at crime a lot different than we do. And many of them, the minute they hit the tarmac, would have their sentences, quote, quite converted, and they would be freed, including a three-time cop killer that I never would transfer, later got transferred to Sweden, and immediately got released. I wasn't going to send anybody out and compromise justice by having him immediately released. And further, in other countries, they can quickly pay the ransom, so to speak, and get out of prison. Their system works a little differently than ours, and if you have the money, you can get out. And the major drug folks, guess what? They have gotten the money. And most of them are the most violent ones, too. So guess what's going to happen? You send them back, they're going to come get out. They're going to come right back across the border. That is a problem. It's huge and costly and a constant battle for us.
Well, I think that's one of those things people look at and they go, that's an automatic budget saver. I mean, it's just... It's kind of a no-brainer. I mean, if we started enforcing those things, we could, you know, we could at least roll back some of the money because people were surprised it was only 10% of the prison population. But I guess we have to remember that that's a ton of money.
Do you have any? Well, it is. And some certainly can go back. And in fact, with that in mind, in 1996, I worked on federal legislation. This was an Immigration Reform Act of 1996, not the major one, but kind of a follow-up one. And what I wanted to do, knowing that these individuals, particularly the big drug dealers, would come back into the United States as soon as they got to Mexico or wherever, that there would be a prosecution, and that would be a federal crime. If you're a formerly deported felon and illegally reentered the United States, that they would be prosecuted by the U.S. attorneys and sent to prison for 15 years. Now, yep, somebody's going to be doing time in a federal prison for 15 years, but, you know, that would have been a deterrent, or would be a deterrent. The book's still on the law's still on the books. It would be a deterrent. But U.S. attorneys were reluctant to prosecute. They didn't want to bother with this bunch of folks. They didn't want to put them in prison beds in federal prisons. So it didn't mean anything. I knew that they were going to come back, so I wanted there to be the consequence if they did, and even though we've got something on the books, it's not been implemented because too few are prosecuted.
Well, that's something we're going to return to here in a couple of minutes. We're going to thank our advertisers, be right back with you with Assemblyman Jim Nielsen. We're going to talk more about California politics here on We the People at KCNR, 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Is that a mass exodus for the state of California? I hope not. Hey, if you heard me laughing, it's because we have to do something to entertain ourselves on the break, and I'm looking at baby pictures of Aaron's little granddaughter, so I was giggling at a baby picture, just so you know.
And then the music started. Surprise!
Yeah, welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. Give us a call, 605-4567.
And we've left Charles on hold for like 1,000 years because we forgot he was on there.
Sorry, Charles.
Charles, we are really good at this call-in thing. I got to tell you, they're going to ask us next to please host a call-in show because we're so good at it.
Yes, because we like to keep our callers on hold for as long as possible.
What a knucklehead.
Right.
Hey, so fire away. What do you have for Assemblyman Nielsen there?
Well, in the earlier hour, Senator LaMalfa was talking about this voter ID thing and this email absentee proposal that's floating about in the legislature, and I'm sure there are probably other similar such proposals being floated about in the legislature, and it seems to me like, you know, the preparations would need to be made to subject these things to referendum, because, I mean that's really going to be our only recourse, given the willingness of the other side to want to allow in make-believe votes, dead people's votes, votes from other planetary bodies that they can make up as they go along, that sort of thing.
Get all your pets to vote. So
oh, of course, and don't forget the cockroaches.
Well,
how about the felons, folks? This realignment plan is going to result fairly immediately in 40,000 felons becoming voters.
Oh boy,
that's what somebody asked earlier. I forgot about that. They get to vote now?
Under the governor's realignment, 40,000 will, because they'll be discharged from parole a whole lot sooner. And there was a bill we were dealing with in the legislature the other day that the inmates in state prison should not be counted as residents of, you know, in the census, residents in the census, in the prison where they're sitting, but rather from whatever county they came from. So corrections would have to sort it out, all the counties they were from, the census, and they would be registered in those counties. You want to know why? Money. If you get more people in your community, say, take L.A., for example, well, they've got more people in prison. Well, those people in prison are counted in the census in Solano County, at Vacaville or Susanville, and that's where they're counted. Well, they want them to be counted in L.A. County. Why? So they can get more federal and state money apportioned.
Well, that might change the enthusiasm level of all of our Tea Party folks going out there on voter registration drives.
Well, further, you know, Charles talked about the referendum. Bills in the legislature now to almost wipe out or greatly diminish the ability of the citizens to do an initiative or to do a referendum, to make it harder. They want to make it harder. Why? Well, they'd love to have the legislature make all of the laws. And in terms of getting people on the voter rolls, no voter ID, no ID. Why? How dare us show an ID to prove that we are the voter that's going to be in that voting booth, or to do anything to really verify that we are a voter by absentee? Oh no, we don't want to do that. Sometimes you feel like you're at the Mad Hatter's Tea Party, folks. I tell you.
Well, this has come up in the last hour as well, but SB 641. Sally's got a question here that allows the voters to register on the day of the election. We spoke about that in the last hour, but we actually didn't ask the question, how likely is that to go through?
It's a fair chance with the majority party wanting to do that. Again, does that lend itself to integrity of the process? Heavens no. Day-to-day, there was something called the motor voter years ago. You register in the DMV, and I fought that one. But this is coming in and registering at the polls. There is absolutely no way to verify and the validation of that voter. It is absolutely invites nothing but fraud and corruption.
Well, I mean, people could literally go in mass from, you know, voter precinct to voter precinct and just register under different information.
Absolutely. And once you get the vote taken, it's very hard to undo the vote.
Right.
Very hard and very costly. So those who purport that this is going to be good to get more voters involved, I think not. It's certainly going to be good for getting folks to vote for what you want to vote for if you're any given powerful constituency that would throw folks coming in masses, just like you suggest, going poll to poll to poll and registering voting.
I have somebody on here that says they have two dogs and a cat and they're registering all of them.
Well,
the good news is they vote like we do.
Folks about having 40 felons go back on the voter rolls right away. I mean, I kind of kid the majority party. You know, those are the folks that you count as your voters. I guess you're trying to bump it up, huh? Or are you going to be out there registering them right away? I guess so. That's sad. You know, I wanted to hit a couple of other areas. If you have callers, break into me. But redistricting that we're going to have to contend with right now. And something else that's really important. It's about the state ignoring its own laws. And it's very personal to me. Two young girls, Amber Dubois and Chelsea King, are now dead and buried, raped and murdered in San Diego because a law I wrote, the sexually violent predator law, which would allow a sexually violent predator, allow the DAs to keep that predator in prison in treatment rather than in our community. The board that I was the chair of would hold a hearing, and then we would, if we found cause, we would submit it to the DA, and the DA could do a civil trial and keep that individual in prison. Well, Albert Gardner, who murdered these two girls, was not evaluated, as he should have been, under the law. And I argue because CDCR wants people out of prison, not in now. And he was not evaluated, as he should have been, which could have kept him in prison, nor was he evaluated for something else that I worked on for decades called the mentally disordered offender commitment, which could have also kept him in. So then he gets out into the community. He violates parole seven times. Six times illegally under a regulation that I wrote as chairman of the Board of Prison Terms called the Robin Reagan Regulation for a victim's next of kin. Her father was killed by a parolee who had a gun. It required all behavior, it requires all behavior of any parolee who is a serious and violent, meaning real bad. Anything they do had to be reported to the board. It could not be ignored by CDCR corrections. It had to be reported to the board. And over these last years, I put it into effect in about 96. They have fought me ever since. And those six times, he violated parole seven times. Six times he was not reported. His behavior was not reported. He could have put back in prison one year for any of those violations. 1 year. Would not have been on the streets to kill those girls. The seventh time, the board, which has become vastly more liberal that I headed, he had been living too close to a school. That is the most serious of offenses on parole for a sex offender. Been living too close to a school. And so they said, oh, well, you've moved, so don't do it again. Be a good boy. Guess what? He didn't. That is tragic. That is offensive. That is repulsive. And that's the state of California ignoring its own laws. The Inspector General did a study, confirmed the same thing. You know, doesn't that just irritate the heck out of you?
Well, you know, when I was a kid growing up, I used to go with my brother and we'd leave the house early in the morning on a summer day and we'd take off and we'd just go play around town and climb the hills around our house. And my mom would say, well, just make sure you're back in time for dinner. I mean, I don't think most parents today even want to let their kids out the front door. How sad is that?
It is sad. Well, another I'd like to bring up is the bureaucracy. One of the delights, and I have to call it a delight, of being back and being vice chairman of the budget committee the last now 2.5 years was to be the lead role in cutting $40 billion out of the state budget. $40 billion is not now spent that would have been otherwise, but for these efforts in the last 2.5 years, or the last 2 years, actually. That's pretty significant, but I ask the citizens, your listeners, what has changed with the agencies of government you deal with? Your favorite agency, Water Board, Air Board, DMV, you name it. Have they become any more helpful and cooperative and friendly and citizen-friendly? I think not. Doug and I spend most of our time fighting the bureaucracies on behalf of the constituents that we represent. So that does not argue for restoring that $40 billion. No, I would argue the contrary. It says we have not cut near enough. That the bureaucracy of government is so terrible, and it doesn't even govern under authority. Very often what the bureaucrats will do or tell you to do, a small business person, for example, they don't have the legal authority to require that, and we need to challenge them. And that's another one of our real problems.
Well, it's been like 2 hours of problems. So you're going to have a 15-minute wrap-up here to let people know what you see coming. Doesn't necessarily have to be a happy, rosy picture, since that might be a little hard to pull out and actually tell the truth. But we do have about 15 minutes to wrap up. You get 2 minutes to get some coffee. We're going to say thanks to the people who make KCNR float their boat here. in these tough times, and we'll be back with We the People in a couple of minutes, the home of Free Fire Media.
Reality check, folks. Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. We're wrapping up the last 15 minutes of the show with California Assemblyman Jim Nielsen. And Assemblyman Nielsen, it hasn't been the rosiest discussion today, but I think, you know, folks need to face reality. I think that's really important. That's the best way to, you know, protect yourself and be prepared. So with the last 15 minutes of the show, you know, on a real ground level format, what can real people do, and what do real people need to look out for in the next little while?
Well, let's bring it up a notch, because I am the insufferable optimist, and I hope you are too.
You know, somewhere inside, yes, we are.
Well, you are, and the Tea Party is a manifestation of that, okay? The folks who have participated in the Tea Party across the nation, they got fed up, just like a whole lot of us did in 1978 with the Howard Jarvis and Paul Gann initiative, Prop 13. That was the Great Tax Revolt, and I was one of the original Prop 13 babies. Well, I'm still around in a leadership role, and that was partly what motivated me as a young farmer to get active in politics. And your Tea Party folks are what I call the wind beneath my wings, or Doug LaMalfa's wings. Knowing you're out there and having you get organized and pay attention and become voices is really what the hope of the future is. There are other forces at play, I guarantee you, in Sacramento that do not see it the way you do, and they're happy to just roll all of you. So the very fact that there are a lot of people throughout America who are now getting active and speaking out, I'm preaching to business community leaders all the time the need that they've got to devote each some of their day to political awareness and involvement, because someone else will then be the architect of your destiny if you don't. So that's one of the real great hopes, I think, for the future in resolving some of these huge challenges that we've got to face. The economy is improving just a slight bit. So what we can't do, though, is pass taxes to discourage that further. That discourage investment, that discourage us from trying to build our businesses instead of just retrenching. I'm glad to hear your advertisers on there who are still voting with their money and their bucks, investing in the community, trying to provide goods and products, and the folks who buy those products. They're still hopeful about their future. We have got to stand up and be counted, each of us. To me, that's a very encouraging thing and our real hope. And you know, we get despairing about our children. I got to speak at Chico State graduation, commencement speaker for Chico State, both Saturday and Sunday, about three Saturdays and Sundays ago. And I looked out over that crowd and the enthusiasm within those youth, and it just gave me great hope. Or I have groups of FFA kids, Future Farmers of America, come into my office, or foster children that come to visit me. And I have hope. I have hope. I see in their lives and their faces and their countenance, and I see in them values that will make us survive as a country.
Well, I think that we've survived all sorts of things in this country for, you know, last couple hundred years. We've been innovative and creative. I think it just becomes one of those things. People get frustrated with the federal government and they look at what's going on there. Then the state's also doing that. And then you look locally, mm-hmm. and you're having it right in your own backyard. I mean, a classic case in point, you have a business owner in Siskiyou County who's been shut down for 3.5 years, and the county's on its way to spending $200,000 plus in outside legal counsel to sue him for building a parking lot. And at the end of the day, they won't even get a fine from him. It's not even a fineable offense. So why are they doing it? Spending precious resources from a county to keep somebody out of business.
Yes, and the bureaucracy is doing it every day, too. And my point is, we need to stand up to them. When you get someone from an agency, and in fact, Doug LaMalfa and I have discussed putting a poster in businesses that if they get some problem with some agency, to give us a call. Aaron, that's our job, to intervene on behalf of our constituents. And, you know, this is on the positive note. Sometimes we win. I give you a great funny, not funny, it's a dramatic story. A small business in Yuba City, and bureaucrats in his office saying, we're going to take four $800 chairs to burn them, to test them for flammability and what they emit when they are burned. And the just distraught owner calls my Yuba City office, and Mark Spanigal is in there, and Mark goes running over there, as trained by me to do this, and he says, Miss DCA, Department of Consumer Affairs, what authority do you have to take this person's shares? And they don't know. And they call Sacramento, and they don't have an answer. And he says, you will leave. Well, they're used to intimidating the little business owner. They're not used to being intimidated, so she does leave. And 2 weeks later, we get a letter that says, well, we're not going to do that anymore. We challenge their authority. That's a victory. Once in a while, folks, you can win, and you never win unless you fight back.
That is an absolutely true story, and I think that the challenge is going to be for people to fight back effectively, because you have a whole bunch of people out there that are not engaged at all, that are just literally heating up.
You know, and it's amazing, because I think we should make a really clear distinction here between elected officials and representatives and bureaucracy. And bureaucracy, in a nutshell, is basically the portion of the government that bullies people. And they know that most people will give in. But most of the things that they do are lawful. You know, for instance, Aaron's example of the gentleman in Siskiyou County with the parking lot. I mean, what is that about? And he's got the wherewithal to fight. And people have to trust that they can fight.
But you look at it and you think, are you kidding me? I mean, here's a place where their budgets are very severely curtailed, and they have so many things going on in that county. They've got roughly 19% unemployment, and you're keeping a business owner from operating because they think he cut into a hillside a little too far to build his parking lot. You should see the retaining wall. I mean, it would hold back Mount Rushmore. And they, you know what, I don't know what they're trying to clip him for, mind without a license or something like that, but they've got, they're upwards of $158,000 to outside counsel.
Taxpayers' expense.
Taxpayer money. And then they've spent another $75,000 on outside counsel because their own county council is too busy. Just too busy. So they had to hire somebody else. It's like, you know, things like that. There are a million examples, but...
But the way we deal with it, folks, is we stand up
and
are counted. You mentioned Siskiyou. I would like to talk just briefly on redistricting. That's coming to a head right now, and the lines that are out as of yesterday, I'm frankly sad, because it causes the 2nd Assembly District to not have Siskiyou and Modoc County in it anymore. I very much appreciate and enjoy representing those fine counties. We've got a lot of big battles we're dealing with up in the Siskiyous, as you know from former programs, trying to save their water from the bureaucracy there. I don't like that. Doug will continue to represent Siskiyou, but I would not. The 2nd District will pick up Yuba and lose Siskiyou, Modoc, and Western Butte. It's still a wonderful district, and it's still a community of interest, and you should feel good about that. But that district stretching across the north, I don't think is the best of all worlds for us. But everything from Shasta south is pretty much the same as it had been. So that's also a little bit of what I consider good news up here.
Yeah, the folks up there are frustrated that yet again, you know, their world is being turned around. It just seems to keep coming. And I just don't think there's any coincidence that, you know, you take a county with a lot of resources and a lot of resource issues, you know, low budgets, high unemployment, and you kind of target all the mess for them, you know. They need all the help we can give them.
I will continue to help that county, all the counties I've ever represented. Now I will definitely have represented more counties than anyone in history. That'll be 17. I'm at 16 now. I will add Yuba that I've never represented before. But I'll still help the folks up at Siskiyou, even if I'm not their representative. I'll work with whoever is, including Doug, to protect their water, just because that affects us all. That does not just affect Siskiyou County.
No. You're exactly right, and that kind of spirit of, you know, that's the great thing about you and the senator is that you guys understand that it's about the people. I remember, you know, hearing that Doug's rule is you represent the people to the government, not the government to the people, and you guys certainly take care of that.
That gets turned around, and I want to assure you, and I say this to people every day that I meet with, knowing you and what you do and seeing your world and living in your world, when we're in those long hours in the building, that's on my mind. That's in my mind's eye, and that's in my heart. So I realize what's going on down here, and it means a lot to you, and that gives me the strength to endure those long hours in the budget committee and all of the antics and nonsense and lack of rules and everything else that we're having to deal with. It is a challenge.
Yeah, it's probably hard to even just talk about it. I have people on the chat room telling you, I have Lori on there says, thanks, Jim, for all you try to do for us. So I know there are people out there who do get it, who do follow it. We really appreciate the updates that you guys send from your office. Those help a lot. I forwarded those to some folks outside the district, and they're not getting that from their representatives. So thanks for doing those, too. That really keeps people in the loop. And we are closing in on the last 30 seconds. So we want to thank you for joining us this morning, and we're going to have you back because there's way more we need to do.
We appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Let's keep fighting on together, ladies and gentlemen. Have a wonderful Sunday.
Absolutely. We've got a great song for you, so listen through. We'll see everybody next week here on We the People at KCNR, 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Was right, like a rock. Like a rock. I was strong as I could be. Like a rock. Nothing ever got to me like a rock. I was something to see like a rock.
Thank you for listening to KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media. This is KCNR Shasta Redding.